So, good evening, everyone. Nice to see you once again. We're covering like a wide swath of Europe from the Netherlands, the north of the Netherlands, where Marjolaine is, all the way to past Paris and then Tomar, where Marlene is, and then Anna, and then Miguel in Lisbon. So, very nice. We're fortunate that we have this opportunity. Today I was talking to another Dharma teacher and we were saying how it made everything so much more, well, it has a positive effect that we can be online like this. Wonderful, wonderful opportunity to stay connected, to practice together, all of this. At the same time, for us teachers, it's like we're just always online. And she said she sometimes has the impression it's almost like a mini burnout after she's been online all day. And I can relate to that. And I'm, we're coming to the end of this cycle, and so then there'll be the summer, and I'm thinking how I can rearrange things so I'm not so much online or differently or something. So, but it's wonderful. At the same time, it's beautiful that and so precious that we have this opportunity. And I'm happy when people come. I'm always happy when whoever is there. Something that's been very present has been, well, actually, it happens to be Miguel's Dharma name, true person of no rank. But it's all the Dharma names as well, because they're all referring to this embodiment of no self, not self, pointing to emptiness and interconnection. All of our Dharma names are about that. But this two per person of no rank is a saying that comes from 9th century China and is very telling. And it's been present for me, particularly because of the state of the world, which is so not that. The way that the world is at the moment is very much everyone wanting to be of a rank. And it's really tragic because, the way our culture is set up now in our economy, in the society, you have to be someone special. You're evaluated for how you do everything. And you need to work so that you can support yourself. And in order to do that, you have to achieve and become someone special, be seen, and that way then you can feel safe. But actually, it's just producing the opposite. We become more and more unsafe because the true home where we truly are safe is the true person of no rank, of no position, of no self, which is what our practice is about. The whole practice is about forgetting the self. The essence of our practice is that. So, and it takes so much effort to be different, to be special. And it involves so much tension and resistance. So much constructing that takes so much effort. Whereas, true person of no rank, there's no tension, there's no pressure, there's no resistance. So, this afternoon, when I had a break, I just watched a few minutes, the end of a fabulous tennis match. It's the French Open at the moment, so it's on television all the time. I haven't watched, this is the first match that I've seen, and I only saw the end of the last set. So of five sets, so I didn't see the rest of it. But it's I watched it because it was this young French player who was playing and who is only 17 years old and is creating a sensation, of course. And this thing of no self and of no rank and identifying with self really came up for me because the crowd, of course, was all French. You know, there's like between 5 and 10,000 people around this court and just going mad, crazy, cheering, going wild for this boy who is French, right? So they're identifying with him because he's French. He's actually from immigrant parents from Cameroon and Ivory Coast. But he's French. He was born and raised in the Paris suburbs and completely French. You know, a suburb probably not so far from Debbie's suburb, Sarcelles, and which is a very, you know, popular working class, a lot of immigrant suburbs. And people who have tickets for this tennis tournament, you know, they're mostly wealthy, connected. They play tennis. If you're a member of a tennis club, you can get tickets, but you have to pay for the tickets and they're very expensive. And here they were just like going absolutely crazy, insane about this kid who plays amazing tennis. So that was really just. First of all, that was incredible. And it hit me how, so they're all like so identified with this boy because he's French. And the poor other player who's from Paraguay, who was also playing great tennis, but it was in the fifth set, the tiebreak of the fifth set, you know? So, I mean, working up to the tiebreak. And so, he must be playing great tennis, the guy from Paraguay too, you know. But nobody was cheering for him. They weren't booing him, and they weren't, when he, you know, played a good point, they would clap, but they were really cheering wildly for their boy, the French boy, right? And so in this crowd, so this is also interesting, is all of these individuals in the crowd completely forget themselves when they're cheering. No one is cheering any louder than the others or saying things that others aren't saying. It's just one collective cheer. So they're letting go of their self in that moment, although they are completely identified with being part of a special group, French, identifying with one of the players, French. There's a lot of identification going on there, but in the moment of participating in the crowd, it's all lost. It's all they're not individuals anymore. They're all just one, and we know that that can be dangerous with crowds. It can also be just this, you know, amazing moment of communion that they were having with this boy, this French player. The French player ended up winning. It was quite dramatic, the whole thing. And they had started at 11 in the morning, the match. And it was almost 4:30. It was almost 5, actually, when it ended, the match. And it's just boiling hot here in Paris. You know, it was probably on the court, it was probably 33 degrees or something. Really, really hot, which at this time of year in Paris is really unusual. And they'd been out there for 5 hours. Fortunately, they're young because if they were old, they wouldn't have lasted very long, right? So at the end of the match, of course, you know, he's like basking in the crowd, blowing kisses to the four directions of the crowd. And then they interview him. This is just the ritual. Someone from the tournament comes out and then put a microphone in the middle of the court and they interview him. And so the first thing he said when they said, you know, what can you say about this match or something? And the first thing he said is, The only thing I can say is thank you, merci, to the crowd. He said, you guys, without you, I never would have won this. Without you, it would have just been me all by myself. I never would have done it, which is an incredible thing for a kid to say, too. You know, he's like completely let go of his identity of being this rising star of tennis and saying, I didn't do it. The crowd, you are what did it. You guys are actually stronger than me, you know, which was quite astounding. And then they said, you know, they asked this question. So in the tiebreak, you were leading. He was leading the tiebreak where it's whoever gets to 10 first wins. He was leading the tiebreak 6-5-0. So, and then 6-1. So he really only had a few more points and he would have won, you know, he would win. The other player caught up and it was 6-6. So they asked him, what was going on in your mind? Whatever. And he said, well, you know, at first I was counting the points and calculating and thinking all of this. And then he said, when it got to 6-6, I just said, forget it. Stop counting. Just play the point. And it was, I don't think I've ever heard a tennis player say that before. He's just stopped counting, which freed him from being identified with, I have this many points, you have that many points, I am this far away, he's that far away. Just this ball that comes to him, just this stroke that comes to him, just this, just the next ball, just the next ball. Very Zen way of approaching tennis. You know, of course, this kid probably knows nothing about Zen. But as we know, you know, because I'm a sports fan, I know that there's an element of something Zen-like about sports at some point. So as I'm watching all this and the crowd just going wild for this, I kept thinking, how is it that all of these people are so identified with this boy, you know? As individuals, they're identified with him. I mean, I was too, you know, I wanted him to win too. But I didn't pay hundreds of euros to go sit there through this boiling hot afternoon and watch this tennis match. I didn't even watch it on television until the last, you know, 10 points. But we easily can become identified with a person. Of course, we're identified with countries, you know, we're identified with groups. We're identified with our family. We're identified with being a certain way. We're identified for even, you know, putting the spoons in this place and the knives in this place. And if somebody does it differently, this recently happened to me in my house. And I'm like, why did they put the knives in that place? We never put the knives in that place. Or, you know, we can be so identified. And it's like we have 100 little details to reassure ourselves that we exist, to reassure I, you know, to reinforce I. These tiny little details, like putting the knives in this place and not that place. Or, you know, we reassure ourselves by saying, oh, the French boy, you know, so we're French, so we want the French boy to win. And in that, you know, in that identity, sometimes we lose ourselves, which is the paradox of it, you know? So we're all on this path of the essence of practice is to forget the self. And yet we're all kind of identified where we are in our practice, who might be farther than me, who's been doing it longer, you know, when we're doing our jobs at this, in the retreat, how that person should ring the bell. We become identified with whatever we're doing. The person who's doing the flowers, you know, we criticize them or we love the flowers they put there, or the cooking, we love what they make or we don't. Or, you know, some of us got sick after the last retreat, we could start blaming the Tenzo. The Tenzo already feels just super guilty and has taken on the responsibility for people getting sick, which Who knows? Who knows if it came from him, but he feels like it did, right? But he's taking it as a teaching. He's taking it as actually, a true man of no rank teaching of holding the position of it's my kitchen. I'm the tenzo. I'm the cook. This is my, I'm supposed to be in charge of this. Not I, me, this great person, but that's what my role is, to be sure that people wash their hands, to be careful that things are cleaned, to be careful that things are put away properly and stored properly, and if it's no good, throw it away, and to tell people. He said that he felt that there was way too much talking in the kitchen, and he said it's my responsibility. I have to take that responsibility and remind people. It's not about talking in here, So that's a way that we, in all of these positions that we take during retreats, whatever the position is, they're opportunities for us to let go, to forget the self, and just hold that, whatever we have to do. Like the boy who just stopped counting the points and just played the ball. It's all he had to do was just play that next ball. When he did that, well, he won the next 2 points and he won the match. Of course, he knows how to play tennis. He's spent, since the age of 5 years old, which actually is only 12 years when you think about it. He's only 17 and he started to play when he was five. But within the span of his life, that's a long time to be playing tennis and to do that. Full on, I don't know if he stopped going to school or what, but and the irony of it is that to be someone special, to hold a rank, to be not just ordinary, it's a battle. It requires a fight. And we see the fights going on around us all over. All of the fights we see around us are about that, a rank, maintaining a self, being special, being different. And because in order to do that, we have to stake out our territory and defend it. The true person of no rank has no territory to defend. There's nothing to defend. You in that moment, you experience the emptiness, you experience the interconnectedness, and you see there's nothing to defend. The person who started this whole thing that we're involved with, the Buddha, he gave up that battle. That was what happened for him. He gave up the battle of trying to be special. And saw that to be fully awake is just to be ordinary and nothing special, no rank. Now, so this metaphor with the tennis match, it only goes so far because all of those people in the crowd were still totally identified with being French and wanting their boy to win. I don't think any of them, well, who knows? I mean, I can't make this assumption. I was going to say, I don't think any of them had an experience of awakening to true person of no rank during that. But in a sense, when you're all together doing this one thing together, you do have that experience, whether you realize it or not. You're lost in the crowd, we say. And we don't want to be lost in the crowd. And yet sometimes we do. There's something really joyous and powerful about joining that crowd that's cheering. Losing yourself, losing yourself with all those others. Which we do in our rituals. That's what all of our ritual in retreat and even here is about. So we all sit, the bell rings, and we all just sit for this time. Online, it's a little different because people arrive not all at the beginning, but they come and they respect that ritual and they become part of the whatever's happening at that moment. Some of the other Dharma teacher I was talking with had just come back from a pilgrimage, a walk in Italy on a path that's similar to the Compostela walk that ends in Spain, it's a pilgrim's trail too, and it ends in Rome. It goes to Rome. I don't know where they started from, but and they walked for a week. And so 7 days. And they did about 20 kilometers a day, which is a lot. And they were carrying backpacks. And there were seven or eight of them, all women. And she said she hadn't expected it, but of course there's tensions that arise in a group like that. People don't walk at the same pace. Some people want to start earlier than others. Some people want to stop for a coffee after an hour and a half. All kinds of, stuff that comes up. Some people wanted to talk. And she, as so-called teacher, I mean, she's a Dharma teacher, but was questioning how much she should impose something, and I said, well, it's kind of like Oriyoki, where if you could make it like Oriyoki, where you all start together and you all end together, so you could do something like that. And they had kind of a, modified thing where if someone fell behind, someone else would stay with them. And then so be sure that nobody was alone. Sometimes they would, all agree to stop and have a coffee together. But towards the end, there was one person who wanted to start an hour and a half earlier because she was always falling behind. And the teacher didn't want that, didn't want her to have to start an hour and a half in advance. All this to say that when we have our rituals, when we have this framework, it really makes it more simple. And we're not involved with preferences. We can take into consideration the differences and modify the structure to accommodate that. But we're not leaving it down to individuals to identify with their preferences and then try to manifest them. And then everybody's trying to manifest preferences. Which is the important, which is why we have the ritual. So we let go of our preferences, which helps us, like I said, these 100 little details that we hold on to reassure us that we exist. And in Sesshin, even, in retreat, even though we don't have to think about food, we don't have to think about when we're going to go to bed and get up, we don't have to think about the schedule, it's already made. Within that, even there's 100 little details that we're still hanging on to. It's a great framework, though, to help us see those 100 little things that we're hanging on to. We like a certain cup, or we want a certain kind of tea or coffee, or someone in the last retreat said the coffee was too weak. And so they decided to take it upon themselves to make the coffee so it would be stronger. Okay, we can, why not? Why not? We can also look at it and say, okay, well, that's the coffee that's being served. I'll just drink it. That's what it is. Some retreats, there is no coffee. We could even say that there is no. And then we had in our last retreat, there was always like this array of chocolate and cookies and things. And sometimes we say no, no sugar, which helps us to then confront that little detail that we use to like hold on to some part of ourselves. I want my sugar. What happened to me several times during that retreat was coffee and tea was there at 3:30. I didn't come until 3:45. And when I got there, twice when I got there was half a cookie left. Like, for some reason, somebody would like take half of the last cookie, and so there would be just only a half of a cookie left. Okay, maybe I would have liked a whole cookie, but there was only half a cookie, so I just took half the cookie. I didn't even really need the cookie. If there had been no cookies left, it would have been fine. But, we want cookies, whatever. So, and we create so much suffering with our attachments to this stuff. We create suffering for ourselves, and then we create suffering for the others because we complain, we get angry, we reject, we start a war with countries. The country fights back. It just, from those 100 little details, it explodes into, the entire planet. So, the beauty of our practices, the essence is that we're saying to us, ourselves, forget the self, true person of no rank, no position. And it's such a relief. It really is just such a relief. That part of the Dharma teacher, part of her difficulty was that she was identifying with, oh, so should I be the teacher or not in this group? And how should I impose myself or not? Which is like really very self-involved. And she saw that she was really involved with having a rank and holding that rank, But when we, break down those walls, when we drop the walls that we've constructed to reassure ourselves that we exist, we're so isolated by those things. We think we're safe, but we're isolated, actually. And when we let go of them or lower them, we have connection. We have this beautiful communion. The people in the crowd cheering at the tennis match, they've let down their walls. And those people, under ordinary circumstances, walking down the street, they would not be screaming and shouting like that, and laughing and sharing joy with the other people in the street, especially French people, they would think that was like super ridiculous if somebody's walking down the street expressing overcome with joy, It's so precious. That connection that we discover when we put down the walls. When we stop trying to be special. When we stop counting the points. When we stop counting the points, we win. We can't lose. There's nothing to lose. Like Maizumi Roshi said to his student. When they were all sitting around, Maizumi Roshi and his brothers, who were also Zen masters, would sit around and chat and play cards and drink. And his Jisha, Maizumi Roshi's Jisha, was sitting there. And his brothers, from time to time, they would surprise each other and say, "What is it?" These are Zen master games, right? So, what is it? But never to the Jisha. So suddenly Maizumi Roshi turns to his Jisha, as a student, and says, "Tenshin, what is it?" The guy's name was Tenshin. "What is it?" And he was scared, he was surprised, and he said, "Oh," they were out in the countryside in the mountains at night, and he said, "I love the sound of the crickets at night." And Maizumi Roshi said, "Tenshin, don't cheat." And of course the student said, "Oh, Roshi, I'm not cheating." And Maizumi Roshi said, "If you cheat, I lose." Interesting, huh? Because if the student, Maizumi Roshi's whole purpose is for the student to awaken, to be a true person of no rank, to fully embody that. And if the student is cheating and trying to be someone and giving, so I'm sure Maizumi Roshi knew his student and could hear in that response that he knew he was supposed to say something like that. it wasn't really authentic. He had enough practice with koans or whatever that he was supposed to just say whatever is here right now. But my Zumi Rishi knew him well enough to see that there was something not, that it was still an identity there. And so he's saying, if you cheat, if you don't truly embody it, well, then I lose, which is, kind of twisting the whole thing, because Mizumi Roshi's not identified with winning or losing. But he's playing into the student still being identified with that. And of course, the student wouldn't want his teacher to lose. He wants his teacher to win, right? So, okay, I have to do something else if I want my teacher to win. And when he truly sees that there's no one winning or losing, he stops cheating and he sees what his teacher means, right? So, all of this from a tennis match this afternoon, but not only. I'll stop there, and if anyone wants to share or question or comment, please do.
Hello, everyone. I really appreciate that those examples of how to at the same time be without a rank and fulfilling a rank or position, or and of course when the fixed sense of identity is not present, but it's very it seems very simple saying it that way, and sometimes it is, but sometimes we're just looking how to manage the thing of having a position like Tenzo or whatever, and not being caught in the position in the rank, just being true person of the rank. Really simple and beautiful. Thank you.
Well, and as I said, the teaching of that came to me from the person himself, that he had realized, because there's a lot of, oh, I can't really tell them to not do that, or I'm not really paying attention or something. There's a lot of self-involvement. There's a lot of identity to self. As we know, the worst, one of the worst things that someone in a powerful position can do is not own the power. Because that's when things become really abusive. We have to fully recognize who we are, where we are, and then we can truly embody it without an attachment.
Yeah, that's one of the things that when I did the course, the Buddhist boundaries, that most have an impact in me, in myself. That thing of, oh yeah, we have to acknowledge the power that we have when we have it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because everybody loses.
Exactly. Yep.
I'm glad I got here in time, at least for something. There were no buses from my train station. So I walked. It was a long hike. Anyway, I'm glad I got here. What you were just saying, Miguel and Amy, owning the power that you have in a situation, but you have to be able to see it. I mean, to a certain extent, except in places where I was given. My task was to be the powerful pe person in the room. I'm not sure sometimes when exactly where I stand in terms of the power that I exude or that I have, and in comparison with other people's rank and stuff. This is not something that's, especially among adults. I spent my life with the teenagers. I was the adult, so I was the queen. But between adults, it's much more bouillé for me. It's not easy to see. And if you don't know it, then you can very easily misuse it.
Exactly. And that's where awareness comes in, paying attention. Who am I? What is this situation? It's not even necessarily so. This morning I was at a shop and there was a bit of a line, and there was an elderly woman behind me who had a huge cart full of stuff. I just had a few items. And so I said to her, you can go ahead. And she said, oh, no, you only have a few things. I have a full cart. And I said, yeah, exactly. Go ahead. You can go ahead of me. She finally accepted and she went. She was kind of, a little nervous about it. And I said, well, I was thinking about my mother, actually, because she was probably not much younger than my mother, and she had a cane, and and she kind of laughed. But so I realized my position in that line, and my power, as it were, being younger. And I have absolutely had the possibility to see the situation. Think of this woman, it's, like sweatingly hot. I can't imagine Debbie's walk. It must have been like excruciating. But her loaded down, waiting in line, and why should I go first? I could completely let go of me and just see that situation. It's not necessarily power in the way we usually think of it. But I had the authority to give up that spot where I was and allow her to go ahead of me. And I had to be aware of the situation. I had to be aware of who I am and not, and who she is, and our interconnection, and the heart connection we have that passes through my feeling for my mother. But at the same time, it was just seeing the situation as it was and letting her go ahead. So it's not necessarily power and think, like I am above and the other is below, but it is, okay, in this situation, how can I behave without attachment to self? Something like that, maybe.
Evening, everyone. Yes, what I was thinking on how power, it's not always for me the question, because what I bring here to you is this. I take care of the garden for many years now, and it's a big garden. And during this all winter and early spring, there was a lot of rain. What we did, mother and me, and people that come to help us, what we did is just to arrange the mess that the storm did in January. We did everything, and finally it's kind of normal environment, this natural place. But with the winter and so many rain, everything grow fully. I almost have no pets now because everything is coming to that. So I have to choose things. And now finally the sun is there. And what I bring you is not about rank, because there is no rank between me and those small entities that are there, those plants and rocks and things that are there and waters. And but it's about me being identified with this caretaker, that I have to. And I always put the question, why do I have to be? Because I've been learning it, everything is perfect as it is. Even if I didn't do nothing in this place, everything would be really, it's nature, okay? But I have this aim to take care of the things I put there in the soil. And now in 3 4 days with this hot sun, the things need to be aroused. And my I sometimes I question myself, because I am so identified with doing the things and taking care of this, but at the same time, it's like you said about the tenzo. I am this is my garden. This is what I do, and I do it gladly. And yesterday and during this night, because it is a dream, something amazing happened, because kind of it's like, because the last thing I did, it's to arouse this salvia. You know what is a salvia? It's a Mediterranean plant.
No.
It's a salvia. We do tea, and it's really good.
Soja.
Sauge.
Soja. Okay. Yeah.
And in the garden, there are several salvias, and each one, well, this is another thing, because Miriam was there and she said, I can help you to arouse. And I said, no. If it's needed, I'll do it. That time it was not needed, because I know this salvia in this corner needs more water because it's all day in the sun. The people who care, who takes care, knows the difference between how much water each salvia do need. Just to mention, sorry, salvia. And the last thing I did yesterday was to arouse this salvia. And I noticed that, oh, I was really, really glad, because it's a sunny day. The salvia just, I was really in full awareness with this, what I was doing. And the salvia was there, kind of, but I did just aroused it. And it's a kind of like it's awareness to a shared life. This life is really important. And during this early morning, I have this dream. Well, this whole night has been really strange, because I kept dreaming about things, and it's about like I was doing my day-to-day life in everyday life. It's very vivid and very nothing special. It's just doing things during the whole dreams. And in the early morning, I remember when my woke up, I was still arousing the soul in the dream. And it was like this interconnection, like she would thank me. She came to the dream, and just somehow what I felt, it's that she was there to just say to me, I am glad too that you do it, because thank you that you do it for me. So I resolved the kind of my problems of too much identity for doing this or doing that. It has to be me that arouses it, because it's a kind of interconnection I have with these small entities there. And it's, for me, it's really great. I had this trip this morning, because it was exactly what I was seeing during last evening, It was how I wake up this morning, except it was the contrary, you know. It's like it was not me rousing, it was the source saying, I'm glad that you rose me. Thank you. It was really, really great for me. And I'm glad to share it with you.
Yeah, nice story. Thank you. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
And if you were drawing like huge separations between you and the plants, you wouldn't even be able to be attentive to them or have that kind of experience, you know. You wouldn't even be taking care of them. Beautiful. Hello, everybody. I have that impression that I don't quite get, special the example of that Miguel gave about this subject of not putting too much self or not putting too much. Not identifying with power or something like that. I'm not sure I can, I'm really getting it. But anyway, in the case that I'm getting it, I understood very well the examples that Marlene gave. And I through these examples, I came to my experience for so many years as a teacher, and now that I stopped that activity, I have these two impressions. That is, if I was teaching something different that is not, you know, art and materials and creation, creativity, I mean, I don't think I could do it. Well, but I was able to do it. And sometimes in my place where the thing went on, the class went on, I felt and the students felt that we were happy there. We were all together doing something. And sometimes it was very quite strong, the feeling. But if things, in my opinion, if things don't went so balanced and so well, and so well as I said that most of the times they went. The first to show me that no, this way it's not good. It was the students, and they would say, "What are you doing? What are you saying? Why are you reacting like that? It's not the way we used to be here." And they would call my attention for, you know, go back and start it all over again, but in another way, in not in that way, and will be very clear doing saying that. And this is You know, that honesty and that relation, this is what I miss by stopping my activity. I don't miss the school. I don't miss, you know, going there every day. I don't miss that. But these moments where I was called, you know, what is this? Why? It's not good like that. And then it happened, some kind of conversation about the feelings and all about things, and things went the other way. I don't know if I'm being clear, but they really didn't allow me to be the boss there. And I didn't want to do to be, you know. Sometimes I was mad about something and I would do it other way, but they would put me in the in the place. And sometimes they would say something like, "Why don't you look at you?" They would say that to me, and I say, "What?" So, that is what came to me. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Anna. I think it's very clear what you say. And it's an example again of, so you say they didn't see you as a boss, but maybe it's because you weren't embodying the attachment to being the boss, something like that. And that you were open when you didn't have a wall up. When they would question you, you questioned yourself, you know, and then the group would come together and do something different. Whereas if you had been really attached to being the boss, this position, this is how I want it, whatever, that would not have been possible. It would have been constant conflict, resistance. You would have had to fight to maintain your authority, have it your way, and they would have resisted, and they wouldn't have wanted that, and they would have rebelled. And I mean, of course, there's details, there's different levels of this, but it sounds to me like part of it, of course, it was a collective thing, but part of it was the way that you were holding this position of authority, which was not attached to you or something like that. The true person of Noriak. But your Dharma name too is that, the way of the heart. The way of the heart is no rank. It's the way of the mind that has all the ranks, and the positions and values, judgments, and things like that. The heart does not. The heart listens, the heart opens, the heart works with others, the heart's completely different than the mind. We need both of them to work together, of course. But the way of the heart is like the way of the true man of no rank. Well, maybe we can stop on that note because that's a very telling thing to stay with. Thank you.